Hello and welcome to this GCP short, produced in partnership with Marsh Captive Solutions, and all about ESG and whether there is a role for captives in supporting their parents' ESG initiatives. Joining me for this discussion is Maria Arana, ESG Leader Europe at Marsh, and a familiar voice to many, Lorraine Stack, International Sales and Consulting Leader at Marsh Captive Solutions. During this 20-minute episode, Maria and Lorraine discuss how the commercial market is factoring ESG metrics into underwriting decisions, the ways we are already seeing captives contribute to ESG efforts, and the direction of travel both for the commercial market and captives. We reference two documents during the discussion, the ESG risk rating tool and Marsh's ESG underwriting survey. You can find links to both of those in the episode show notes. So let's get into the pod. Maria, welcome onto the Global Captive Podcast for the first time. I think it's important probably just to set the context first with regards how commercial insurance underwriters are factoring in ESG principles and policies into their pricing and their products. What trends are you seeing regarding capacity, wording, their products in relation to ESG within the commercial market?
Thank you, Richard, for having me here, and thank you for your question. Before I come into my particular observations of the market, I would like to refer to the Marsh Underwriting Survey that we did in the London market 2022, in which already at that time, 40% of the underwriting community that was inquired acknowledged that they were introducing ESG factors in their underwriting process. But even more, 100% of the community interrogated were agreeing that the ESG factors will play a role in their underwriting process in the future. When it comes to my own observations, I can see that in the underwriting processes, most of the ESG factors, the underwriters are focusing on climate. And that's based on the Net Zero Insurance Alliance originally generated, although now it has disappeared for particular reasons. The underwriters, and for regulatory reasons, the underwriters will try to continue decarbonizing their portfolios. And as a climate in general, we have observing three main characteristics, as you mentioned, capacity withdrawals, obviously from high carbon intensity occupancies, but also capacity withdrawal from occupancies which are exposed to catastrophe phenomena, which are exacerbated by climate change, whether they are wildfires in California, the hail cases in Texas, or the floods in Europe. When it comes to the wording, I think some of the restrictions on the wordings are coming mostly from liability issues related to risk of litigations. And now some of our mostly energy clients will be looking at a climate change risk exclusion on their liability policies if they are one of the energy clients that have a high carbon intensity. And finally, on a positive note, I would like to say that from the market, there is a very strong desire to invest in innovation when it comes to ESG and when it comes to climate. There is these sentences about ensure the transition. But I think there is a kind of uncertainty in which direction to go, on which kind of investments. And I think also this is space from the captive to give direction to the client in which direction of innovation is required for the commercial market.
Maria, one thing I'm interested in is the insurance market actually rewarding high-performing ESG companies, as in other financial areas that we do see that happening?
ESG, as a generic metric, is not as widely established as in other financial services. And rewards are, with exception of a couple, you know, syndicates, quite not that frequent. And I think when it comes to rewarding or incentivizing, I think we need to differentiate between the line of businesses and whether that the line of businesses we found or there have been suspicions of some correlations between loss ratio and the ESG metric in particular. There are line of business like D&O or some liabilities which that correlation exists, and there are other ones in which that correlation doesn't exist. For those line of businesses in which we have found that correlation. There is some timid attempts of some of the insurers to actually reward that ESG posture. On other line of businesses, when that correlation doesn't exist or hasn't been proved as of yet, and in particular, specifically with climate, their insurers have not been actually been able to reward, and climate position or ESG posture has been used widely to yes say no more than to say yes.
Yeah, that's really interesting, your comment about more to say no than to say yes. One of the big topics of ESG in insurance in the commercial market is perhaps pulling out of certain carbon industries, and you've touched upon that. But we also need capacity and coverage for renewable projects, and that has not always been straightforward either. Maria, what can companies do or companies be doing to help ensure their transition activities? And is there a role for the captive?
Well, the role of the captive is a question that I would like to put to Lorraine later on, which I would like it to be. The fact is that there is a strong interest from insurers, from the commercial insurers, to increase the percentage of their portfolio, which is in referring to renewables, but they actually are very reluctant to take a specific risk, and in particular when it comes to technology risk. The energy transition requires some technology innovation that will bring us to the net zero position by 2050, like in waste to fuel technologies, hydrogen, and other new technologies about wind and solar. We don't really see the commercial market coming aggressively or willing to support clients in picking up some of those technological risks, and they prefer to stay with the bread and butter renewable that they have been subscribing traditionally, just increasing their line or their exposure there.
Yeah, really interesting. So, Lorraine, let's talk specifically about Captives End, and great to have you back onto the podcast. How are you seeing clients use the power of their captive to support emerging risk underwriting or drive innovation that could support their ESG performance?
Well, firstly, thank you for the invitation, Richard. It's good to be back on the podcast. On ESG, so I guess ESG is permeating all areas of the insurance business, and captives, of course, as part of the ecosystem are seeing this. It's really interesting to hear what Maria has to say, and it's worth maybe taking just a step back and kind of look at how important insurance is. Like, insurance is key to risk financing. It's a business enabler. It plays across all industries, you know, across the world. And just to give you an idea of scale, the estimated premium written by insurers globally is north of $5 trillion, and assets, you know, are north of $40 trillion. So it means that in the insurance industry can and should influence behaviors and drive change on the asset side through the investment strategy, and then on the liability side through underwriting book. And Maria has laid out some of the, you know, some of the things that she's observing in the insurance industry. And certainly we are starting to feel this in the captives. So what we're seeing is, you know, captive and captive structures writing risks related to climate change, to cyber, pandemics. We're seeing, you know, renewable energy projects such as wind farms and solar energy installations, and that tech piece that that Maria mentioned as well. Also, a great example I saw recently was a risk retention group that we work with in the US. Now, they're writing conservation defense insurance, which is rather unique and new. And, you know, this is where the captive is helping to cover the cost of defending conservation obligations of member land trusts. So there's all sorts of unusual and new ways that a captive can be used. And why? Because captive, Richard, of course, is very flexible in its ability to design custom tailor policies. Unlike, you know, commercial insurers as well, there's an ability to act swiftly and adapt policies based on what the risk landscape requirement looks like. And, you know, finally, I'd say because a captive will be another subsidiary of the group, so it's closer to the underlying business, and so there's a, you know, a better understanding of the emerging risk, like better than conventional insurers. So captives and captive-like products, I'm, you know, will be pivotal in addressing the changes to future risk.
Great. So Lorraine Marsh has done some interesting research in this area, which Ellen spoke to a bit at the RIMS workshop earlier this year, as to whether there is any connection between a company owning a captive and its own ESG rating or performance. Can you explain a bit about that research and kind of what it told you?
Sure, Richard. So Marsh launched its ESG risk rating tool in March 2022. So it's a complementary self-assessment that enables clients to measure their organization's ESG performance and understand their ESG risk profiles from an insurance perspective, because there's other rating tools out there, but this one specifically looks at it from an insurance perspective. So when we, and as Ellen probably told you, when we started the analysis, we sort of expected that companies with captives would have a higher ESG scores, you know, because they have more they're more proactive in their risk management. And we expected to see a correlation with the G component more than anything. So what we did, you know, we couldn't analyze all companies. So what we took was we used data from over 100 large companies, and those would be companies with revenue of $1 billion or more. And the results did find a correlation. So we did find that those companies owning captives had a higher ESG score. And what we were surprised to find was that the strongest statistical significance was relating to the S component, so the social component. Of course, as an EB person, you know, someone who's very passionate about employee benefits, I'd hope that part of that is to do with the greater collaboration and harmonization between risk management and HR. But, you know, there's probably other issues underlying that as well. It's, you know, our research is at its beginning phases. There's more to be done, but it certainly looks very promising.
Yeah, you touched upon employee benefits there, Lorraine. And my next question was actually going to be on that topic, because we know, of course, that there are, you know, not many, but a good number of captives now that do reinsure international employee benefits. And I think it could be maybe a good first step in thinking about ESG in the captive context, because how can a captive's role support that S side of the ESG efforts in the context of international employee benefits?
Great question. And of course, leads into an area that I'm really interested in. So of the 1,600 captives that we manage, about 15% are writing employee benefit risk. And that's growing slowly, but growing. And when I started talking about this, Richard, like 10 or more years ago, the real motivation at the time in including employee benefits in captives was around reducing cost. You know, trying to get a handle on medical inflation and getting access to data. Those are still relevant, but there's another motivation that's kind of gaining traction, particularly for companies with more geographically diverse workforce. And this is where exactly what we're talking about. So using a captive mechanism to harmonize benefits across geography, provide a minimum baseline benefit across the organization. And this shift, I guess, has its roots in the pandemic. So during the pandemic, multinationals were really forced to take a good look at the benefits they were providing across geographies, and many found stark inequalities. And I think you've had some captive owners speaking about this on this podcast in the past. So things, you know, the inequalities were around things that we would think are very, very basic. Things like maternity benefits not available in certain geographies. Things like exclusions like neonatal care, suicide exclusions. And a lot of this is due to the fact that the local benefit delivery mechanisms are based on what the workforce looked like 30 or 40 years ago. Now, change will happen over time, but not fast enough necessarily for employers. So captives can be part of that solution too, in delivering a better employee benefit solution to employees around the world. And you know what, even beyond the risk benefits, captive surplus could potentially be used to support health and wellness programs, you know, family support initiatives, educational benefits, really enhancing the well-being of employees and their families, which is, you know, a big part of the S in ESG.
Yeah, and I think it's always really important to highlight that opportunity, because I think that is a great live example that we already see plenty of captives doing, which is having a direct impact, or could be seen to be having a direct impact on the S within the ESG. Because when we talk about ESG, obviously we do focus a lot, I think, on the E part of this, and rightly so, in my opinion. But the S is incredibly important, and that does show that captives can play a role. It's just about finding where else captives can play a role outside of that area. So what other steps, Lorraine, do you think corporates can take or start to take or start to consider to have their captive playing a role on ESG initiatives for the wider group?
So Richard, there's probably some steps that they should be taking and then some steps that captives should be considering potentially in the longer term. So the ones, you know, in the near term that they should be considering is firstly integrating ESG into captive governance. So establishing ESG policies within the captive governance structure. And at a minimum, this means ensuring that directors, that the board of directors are considering ESG during board meetings. So it's on the agenda. Now, there are regulators, certainly in Europe, that are pushing captives in this direction. So it is important to do that. So make sure it's added to the board agenda. Potentially as well, then incorporating ESG factors into risk assessment processes. So again, regulators in Europe are asking for this, specifically in addressing climate risk. Now, what the implication of climate risk on the underwriting of captive portfolios, and specifically this needs to be addressed now in ORSAs. And obviously, this is proportional and depends on the materiality of the climate risk. But, you know, we're being pushed in that direction. So these are two areas that certainly in the near term, captives should be considering. You know, depending on materiality, then it may be necessary to collaborate with ESG experts and consultants to assess the captive's ESG performance or climate issues. So those are sort of the near term. And then I suppose over a longer term, there are some considerations such as, well, what about investing in ESG friendly assets, prioritizing ESG friendly assets in an investment portfolio? And then perhaps even, you know, in the future, maybe considering ESG-linked insurance products for a group, which would lead to innovation, linking products to ESG performance, perhaps. So lots of opportunity, I think.
Fantastic. So just finally to wrap up then, I think, Maria, as you said, you're not a captive person, so to speak, but hearing what from Lorraine spoken about and your own expertise on the ESG topic, do you see room for captives to be pioneers, both within the insurance market and their own companies on the topic of ESG?
Yes, I mean, and that refers to the point that Lorraine mentioned about the ESG link products or insurance products. I think the commercial market, as I mentioned before, is going into multiple directions and not homogenized. And I think the captive who knows their operations much better than the commercial market can start rewarding and actually bringing ESG factors on their some of their traditional insurance products that they come through the captive.
There's just so much possibility for innovation. We're really just seeing the start of this now. And I suppose the areas that I would see would be in the new products, as Maria has said. And in that area, it's like tailored products like the technology risk, writing risks for, you know, new energy risks, financing for renewable energy projects, maybe tailored green building construction products. There's loads and loads of opportunity. And then there is perhaps using the captive maybe as a means of incentivizing behavior across the firm, you know, providing insurance for subsidiaries with good carbon emission reduction programs or emission offset programs. And then, you know, lastly, I mentioned it already, but I'll say it again on the investment side, really considering social impact investment opportunities. So there's loads of ways, you know, going back to what I said right at the beginning, captives and the commercial market, we're all part of the same ecosystem. And so when we see a movement in the insurance industry, typically, you know, you're going to see captives picking up the slack and being involved in a more innovative way. And we expect to see that going forward.